We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's time to talk a little Notre Dame-USC, and we've got our old friend RJ Abadia with us from uscfootball.com. How's it going, RJ?
It's going great. You know, it's that time of year where if you find yourself covering a football team playing meaningful games, it's the fun. It's the fun of the year. It's the fun of the calendar, without question.
That's right. Going to Thanksgiving weekend, and everybody's got something to play for now. It's hard to beat, I think, and that's... You know, I think that's kind of part of the fun. We haven't had a Notre Dame USC football game where there's really been, you know, the stakes aren't quite as high for Notre Dame, obviously, but they're still playing for potentially a chance to get into a New Year's Six Bowl. There's plenty for both teams on the line, and they're both going to be highly ranked for the first time in a while. So I think it's pretty exciting. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, I mean, we just went through a version of that with the USC-UCLA game. It had been a long time since both those teams had been where they were going into that game. And I think, you know, it's not a conference game and USC having clinched a spot in the Pac-12 championship game. So the stakes are not quite as high, although obviously USC, you know, until they're not in contention, they're in contention for the playoff, you know? And so a win, you talk about this stretch of the season, with UCLA, Notre Dame, and looking like Oregon, although still to be determined, but that's three top 16 playoff teams that USC would be playing. And if they were to win, now you're talking about a 12-1 USC team who's beaten three straight top 16 playoff teams. I think that's a long way off, as we'll get into in a second. I think that's going to be a big ask. But if you get on the other side of that, I don't think there's any question you're talking about a USC team in the playoff.
Right. No, I completely agree. I completely agree with that. That's, you know, we've kind of been talking about, you know, in our shows, different, you know, those scenarios, whether it's USC or LSU, you've got all these teams, you know, kind of lurking out there. Tennessee losing obviously helps everybody out, you know, that it was kind of stacked up behind them. I think everyone was surprised by that, for one. But... So we're sitting here at the end of Lincoln Riley's first season there at USC, and he's obviously done what he went there to do. I mean, if the guy ran for mayor of Los Angeles right now, do you think that he'd win?
Well, depends on the precinct.
I guess, yeah.
he didn't make a good – there's a good chunk of Los Angeles who's not thrilled with him right now. but, you know, what he has done – really, to sum it up in the best way possible, is they are a Lincoln Riley team. In a very short amount of time, that is who and what you see at USC is, for better and for worse. And in this day and age, to be honest, it's largely for better. Like, if you look at the profiles of the top college football playoff ranked teams, almost all of them have an elite offense. And the truly elite, I think, are the ones that couple elite offense with elite defense, but that's a short list. I think in this day and age, especially if you just look in the Pac-12, you see teams with elite offense that try to get opportunistic defenses to do just enough to win. And that's essentially who USC is. And it's worked. I mean, you can't argue with the fact that they're 10-1. And Lincoln Riley, you know, he has never lost more than two games in a season. And that result is still in play, in theory, at this stage and this late in the season. So I think it'd be hard to call this anything but a significant success in year one.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Yeah, I mean, the kind of turnaround that they've had, obviously. What maybe has impressed you the most in covering him over the course of this first season?
I think by far the culture. I think that the chemistry, you know, I think outsiders, including me before I started covering USC, I think there's a lot of perception that what was holding USC back was a lot of intangibles, a lot of character deficiencies, a lot of ways in which they weren't as mentally tough as they were talented. And there have been numerous occasions and numerous examples all season long where that character and toughness was tested and they've answered. You know, they've had good answers for it pretty much every time that they've gone out there. And that's not something we've been able to say about a USC team. And I don't think when Lincoln Riley came in, it was something that people latched onto as an expectation. I think they knew that he was going to take the offense to another level. I think they knew that there would be winning a lot more than last year. But if you look at that game last night, a bunch of the headlining plays were made by transfers, guys who were here. I mean, some as late as the summer, you know, guys who arrived June and July and right. They're making championship plays for you. And the thing is, I think the last time we talked, right, this is a team that had played no games together before September.
Exactly.
You know, they don't have years of common battles, common experience to draw on in these tough moments. And they've had answers far more often than they haven't. And the other thing that's been really interesting is this staff has also not played our guys, their guys. There have been a number of returners on the USC team who, on their own timetable, guys like wide receiver Michael Jackson, Josh Follow, tight end for USC, a bunch of guys, Kyron Hudson as a receiver. I try to name all their receivers, and then there's just so many of them, but Taj Washington, and guys on the defensive end too. And what I'm trying to get at and taking too long to get it is that this staff has proven that if you work, you will get on the field. And that sounds really simple, and that sounds like something you presume would be the case everywhere, but you and I both know it's not the case everywhere.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
And there has been a real meaning to seeing players play their way onto the field as late as yesterday, you know, as late as the last few weeks, but get meaningful roles. And I'm not talking about garbage time roles. I'm talking about in the case of Michael Jackson, you know, there have been games where there was a game, the Utah game, which they narrowly lost. They brought him in cold in the fourth quarter, ran a play for him, and he scored what nearly became the winning touchdown. Last week, last night, Darwin Barlow, running back transfer from a year ago, so before Lincoln Riley arrived, has kind of been a forgotten guy in that running back room with the emergence of Travis Dye, comes in the fourth quarter and finishes off UCLA's final touchdown drive with two strong carries, including a touchdown. Austin Jones stepping up for Travis Dye after spending most of the season backing him up and putting up 125 yards. You know, there have been cases like that all through the year. And those are the symptoms of a good culture. You know, when you see guys, number one, putting in the work, but number two, being rewarded. I think that has been easily the most impressive part of what's gone on this season.
Well, Riley brought Caleb Williams with him, obviously, from Oklahoma, and he's just torn it up all year. Heisman conversation, the whole thing, had a monster game. We're talking right after the UCLA game, had a monster game against UCLA. I mean, even in their loss to Utah, he had a big game. You know, I'm looking back through it. Is Oregon State, like, is that the closest thing that he's really had to a bad game this season?
It is, without question. And you know, I think as a group, you know, that was the first true road game of the season. You know, they had played against Stanford in the equivalent of basically an empty stadium, but that was the first time they went into someplace truly hostile. And as you know, and as you've seen, you know, venue matters. I mean, you can even look at what's happened when Alabama's gone on the road this year.
Yeah.
You know, they've gotten super shaky super fast, you know, whether you're talking about the Texas game, the Tennessee game, the Ole Miss game, and then, you know, bringing it back. So I think venue really impacted them. I also think Oregon State has been by far the best defense that USC has played. And that is until Notre Dame arrives on Saturday, which is a big part of why I would not even be a little surprised to see Notre Dame get the win.
Well, and that's, you know, we were just talking before we started, and I was kind of thinking of this to an extent. You know, it's like you've got UCLA, and USC has always played in these years where Notre Dame comes out to the Coliseum. They've always played Notre Dame and UCLA back to back. You know, the order has been reversed in you know, previous years a lot of times, but they play them back to back, and especially now where you're sitting here in late November, that's got to take some kind of a toll, I would think, on a team like USC to have to win a game like they just did against UCLA, and now you've got your other biggest rival, you know, Notre Dame, coming into the Coliseum this week.
Yeah, and as we were saying, it's a toll in years when the stakes are low,
right?
But it's a toll now because Notre Dame is good. UCLA is good. You know, and USC is good. You're playing for big stakes, and that there is a mental and a physical cost at this stage of the season. And obviously it's still, you know, everyone would trade places, right? Everyone would take the problem of being 10-1, of you know, being on the border of pushing into the college football playoff, of clinching a spot in your conference championship game. These are great problems to have. I think when you zero in on the Notre Dame USC game, it's really just a really conspicuous spot in the schedule, because as we were saying before we got on, USC is playing in a championship game, but they're not doing it for 2 weeks, right? So the Notre Dame game has stakes always. There are scenarios where USC pushes into the college football playoff discussion legitimately here in these closing stretches with a win over Notre Dame. So I don't think it's a situation where USC will not be fired up or will not take Notre Dame seriously or will not prep, none of that. But this USC team, especially on the offensive line, is beat up pretty good from this season. And that's an issue when you talk about Notre Dame. And again, part of me is, it's a little crazy for me because I'm talking about a team that lost to Stanford, coming in. And
you don't have to tell me, you know, it's like they're sitting here at 8-1. Is it 8-1? I always have to do the math on this because this season has just been so weird, you know, to even conceptualize some different. Yeah, so they're 8-1 in their last 9 games with the loss to Stanford, and there's no one on this side that can figure that out.
Yeah, and trust me, I'm not. I, as you know from my own background, that's not something I'm disregarding. I'm well aware of how inconceivable that result was, and remains. But again, so much of this is the when of things, you know, and I feel like I think in the not too distant future, there's going to be a time when this is a conference game, frankly. And we could talk about that at some point. Ooh. But I feel like if USC had to beat Notre Dame to get into the Pac-12 championship game, that's a different feel.
Right.
Right. That's a slightly different. Or vice versa, right? If Notre Dame was playing for a situation, playing for a direct result like that. But I just think, and look, USC has answered every challenge this year but one, and that one was a 1-point loss. So I don't want to make it seem like it's a fait accompli or just it's inevitable. I just think this is a big, big ask when you look at the type of football Notre Dame plays and where they fall on the schedule.
What's you know, as someone who covers USC, obviously, what concern level should there be on the USC side / what confidence level should there be on the Notre Dame side when you look at that matchup, Notre Dame's running game against USC's front seven?
Well, that's a very clear strength versus weakness spot, right? And that's the other part of this is that it's not just the quality of team that Notre Dame is, you know, and they're vulnerable. Don't get me wrong. This is not 1988. I recognize that, but the type of good team they are is kind of what creates the concern. You know, UCLA, if you look at their overall profile, you might call them a better team than Notre Dame, but they're not a bad fit for USC.
Yeah.
You know, even with Zach Charbonnet, like USC actually did a really good job defending Zach Charbonnet. They were the first team in 5 games to keep him under 100 yards last night, which played no small role in the victory. So again, USC is not just going to, they're not just going to lie over. They're not just going to bend the knee here at all. But I just think it's just a tough matchup. This is a good time for Notre Dame to be playing USC.
Yeah, I mean,
this is the best way I'd say it.
I don't know how much of the Clemson game you got to watch, but I mean, I'll be honest, you know, after seeing Notre Dame do that to Clemson, I think everyone on this end went, ooh, that USC game, you know, it looks a lot different now after seeing that, you know. So go back to Caleb Williams, though, for a second.
Sure.
Does he, I mean, everything that, virtually everything that we've seen from him is good. You know, again, like the Oregon State game, they still won that game. And as you said, the closest thing that he's had to a bad game. Is there a real weakness that Caleb Williams has?
I think one of the things that's kind of emerged this season is, I guess, his weakness is an excess of one of his biggest strengths. I consider him the least sackable quarterback, not just this season, but one of the least sackable quarterbacks I've ever seen play.
That's what stands out to me.
The amount of times when there have been guys less than an arm's length from him who not only don't bring him down, they don't even touch him. It's amazing. You watch it over and over again, I have not seen that. You know, you've got, there are Lamar Jacksons and Kyler Murrays and Cam Newtons, and there have been guys, absolutely, over the years, but I can't think of anyone who has been this difficult to sack. The flip side of that is that there are plays that he extends longer than necessary. And that can lead to sometimes some ill-advised choices, but also what it leads to is an offensive line that's got a block for 10 seconds, anywhere from 5 to 10 times a game.
Yeah.
You know, and that takes a toll. Because other than that, it's pretty tough to shoot holes in his profile. I mean, I think the thing that has been, he threw an interception last night, third, I think. I should know this, but I don't. But I mean, he came in at, I think he came in at 31 touchdowns to 2 interceptions.
That sounds right.
You know, elite quarterbacks or coaches are happy with guys who are at 3-1, let right. alone 10-1, 11-1, 12-1. Right. And the thing that stands out about what he's done this year, amongst all the big plays he's made, amongst all the things he's done well, is this team just does not turn the ball over with any frequency, any regularity, which means you've got to get them off the field in 4 downs. And it is really hard to keep this team from gaining at least 10 yards every 4 downs.
Well, you were just touching on their offensive line, and I'm going to give you credit, first of all, because go back to the summer when we talked coming into the season, we were talking about, okay, what are the questions that they have and, you know, all these different things. I brought up USC's offensive line and they weren't very good last year. And you said, well, you know, they got better, you know, by the end of the season, they were a much better offensive line than they were at the beginning of the season. And here we are now, they're a Joe Moore Award semifinalist. So I guess a couple of things. One, and I'm not trying to take anything away from them, you know, because I haven't, you know, I've watched a few of their games and they look good, and you know, and what you're describing. So I guess the question is two part. One, how much better have they looked? But also, you know, how does Williams factor into sort of how much better they look because of all the dimensions that you were just talking about with him?
Well, both things can be true, right? They can be a really good offensive line who has benefited from Lincoln Riley and Caleb Williams. I think both things are accurate. If you look at their numbers, they're giving up pressures on about 36% of the dropbacks, which is not elite low, and it's also not red alert bad, you know? And, you know, again, there have been plays – conversely, where the few times when Caleb Williams has been sacked, it's as much on him as on them. But I think if you look individually, you know, Brett Nealon is the number 2 graded Pro Football Focus center in college football. Andrew Voorhees, who plays left guard right next to him, is the number 3 rated guard. You know, so this is a pretty talented group. This is a good group. And that's really been the big contrast between offense and defense this year for USC, is that Lincoln Riley inherited a pretty good offensive line and one with room for improvement, as you've seen. Defensively, they did not inherit that kind of front 7 and that kind of line of scrimmage presence. And that's how the season's played out. You know, an elite offensive line has turned them into an elite offense. A front 7 and a defensive line that, even with Tuli Tuipulotu, who's an exceptional player, they don't bring that kind of consistency in terms of generating pressure, in terms of stopping the run. And that's why you kind of have the team that you have at USC.
When you look at Jordan Addison, we haven't even talked about him. Of course, the transfer from Pitt, who has been, you know, the number 1 target for Caleb Williams. Again, like, he has not been held in check very often. There've really only been a couple of times that's happened. When that has happened, how have, you know, those two, I think it's 2 teams, maybe, how have they managed to do that?
Well, I don't think there is a book on him. He's not a big guy, but he's very physical. There have been a number of plays where he's made catches and had to fight for that last 2 or 3 yards to maybe get in the end zone. And he's won his share of those fights. So he is a very physical player, but he's not a big player. So, you know, it's the old, you know, it's pick your poison in a certain sense, right? I think teams that have pressed and been physical with him and teams that have gotten Caleb Williams out of sync are the teams that can move the needle with him. But he's just, I mean, he is an amazing route runner, and he has great hands. He went his first, I think that streak's still alive. He's now over 46, 47 catches without a drop yet this season. Wow. He hasn't dropped a pass. And coming in some astronomical number, if you just, sorry, just give me 1 second. I got to juice my laptop here so we don't. We don't go completely.
We don't want the laptop to die in the middle.
I just noticed that the battery thing, so we gotta fight. We got a thrilling climax here. Okay. Right. Okay. Now wait, is this thing on?
Where are we doing? Trust me. This, the Boston Gallus guy last week had a baby sleeping in his arms. You know, when we were doing the interview. So you plugging in a computer is nothing at this point. So.
Yeah. No, I don't. You know what? What world are we even living in at this point? Who can tell? All right. Well, I'm just going to hope for the best here at this point. But no, with Jordan Addison, you know, he's just an all business football player. He's physical. He's an amazing route runner. And he's in a great offense. It's very difficult. And I will say the other silver lining that even Lincoln Riley kind of referenced over the past few weeks when Jordan Addison wasn't available is that they got a lot less predictable. Because they're, like I said, with Michael Jackson and some of the other guys, they're going to throw to the open guy. And if that's Jordan Addison, that's who it's going to be. But it doesn't, you don't see a lot of force feeding in this offense. So now if you're a defense and you do your job on Jordan Addison, but they've got four other receivers out in the pattern, you need your second, third, fourth and fifth best cover guys to cover. And if one of them doesn't, the odds that Caleb Williams is going to find that guy is pretty good.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's pretty, I was just thinking about how Notre Dame lines up to defend that. And it's, I don't know. It's going to be very interesting. They haven't seen, you know, they've seen a couple good quarterbacks, but they've seen nothing like that. They've seen nothing like this system. They've seen nothing like what USC is going to throw out there, you know, from a receiver standpoint. So it's a really curious matchup for sure. And, you know, it's, again, this is a rivalry that goes back forever. And it feels like where these two programs are right now, like this could kind of go back to being a national rivalry here for the next few years, you know, the way things are shaping up.
Well, I think Notre Dame's record in the past five seasons speaks for itself. And I think also it's not a coincidence, but I think their recruiting in the past 5 years,
right,
kind of speaks for itself. And with Lincoln Riley at USC, I think the football, the offense is going to be up at that level. I think we just kind of arrive at the true crossroads for Lincoln Riley. The last bridge for him to cross basically is, can he recruit elite defensive talent and build a defense that matches what he's done on offense? Yeah. That's the final threshold. That's the thing that he couldn't do at Oklahoma. You know, that's kind of the ceiling that he hit there, right? Yep. Is that he put up some unbelievable teams that didn't lose. I mean, they won. They never lost more than twice in a season. But when you get up against that elite team in college football playoff games, it goes south quickly if you don't have answers on both sides of the ball.
That's right. Notre Dame knows that all too well themselves. You know,
that's, yeah, absolutely.
That's bottom line. Yep. Yep.
So yeah, I think it's trending in that exciting direction. I really do think. I think it's not that far away from a scenario where maybe a year from now, this is a top 10 matchup.
Yeah.
I think it's very well from being one as we speak, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's not far off. That's for sure. I saw, you know, and again, we talked in the summer. It was maybe just within a few days after the big USC-UCLA announcement to the Big Ten is when we talked. I saw, I think it was last week that, you know, not so fast, like UCLA might not be able to be a part of this. Do you have any insight, like exactly what is going on with them and what could keep them out of this deal?
Well, the level that's occurring is the University of California level.
Okay.
You know, you got to remember that's the huge difference that everyone knows, but it comes into play at this moment. USC is a private school.
Right.
They are not bound by an institution or an organization larger than themselves. Right. UCLA is a UC school. They are part of the state of California. Right. So there's a board of regents that runs the UCs, and it is not a situation where UCLA is completely autonomous. Now, if you're asking me where would you bet, where's the smart money, I think to the extent that UCLA is committed to making this move, there's a path. You know, but it's not at this moment, it's not guaranteed. You know, it's not the no-brainer that it is for USC. I think, again, my sense of this in the long run, and the long run being inside the next 5 years, I think Stanford, UCLA, Oregon, and Washington are all going to be part of a super conference Big Ten scenario. I defer to you, as always, with issues about Notre Dame. I think at some point in that window, Notre Dame's going to make that choice as well. It might be maybe a little longer than that, a little shorter. I don't know. I think that's where college football's going, and I would be shocked to find out that the UC Regents kept UCLA from that emerging kind of NFL level to super conference tier at the end of the day.
Yeah. As far as Notre Dame is concerned, the biggest chip that fell in their favor here, within the last month, or was when they decided they're going to expand the playoff to 12 teams, keeping that access, making sure that there is more access to the playoff as an independent was big. The next piece they have to solve now is what's going to happen with this TV contract. Are they going to be able to keep NBC, or will CBS or Fox get in the mix? And are they willing to pony up enough that it keeps Notre Dame's attention? You know, because obviously the $100 million a year that all these Big Ten schools, Notre Dame's not just going to jump it. Like, if it's the difference, I think now this is just me based on everything we've heard about their independence and what it means to them over the years. Like, if it's the difference between $75 million and $100 million, if they can get $75 million, I think they're perfectly fine with that because it allows them to keep their independence. But do other dominoes fall that force them closer? Like, do other schools start jumping? Because, you know, I don't know about you, but you know, everyone in this part of the country was sure pretty surprised when all of a sudden here's USC and UCLA jumping. So, you know, that's the next thing, I think, is do other schools start jumping? And does that force Notre Dame's hand to some extent? So, but again, having the access to the playoff is huge for them, and having that independent TV partner is the next biggest piece for them. So that's what we've got to kind of, and that's, I think we've got about 3 years before that, you know, the current contract is up. So
yeah, well, that's the enviable, perfect position, right? I mean, it shouldn't be lost on anybody that it's 2022 and that there is a single college football team that's got its own network.
Right.
Like, that's not a little thing. Like,
right.
That's a big deal. First off, like you said, and I'm not a TV revenue expert, so I would, again, I'm not going to go too far out on this ledge, but in my line of thinking, if you've got your own network, you got to be pretty healthy financially. That deal has to be bringing in something pretty competitive to make it work, right? And if you are the only school that plausibly gets a deal like that, you're not giving that up unless you absolutely have to give it up. And I think that playoff component is the part that matters the most. But I also think, like, even with a 12-team playoff, if the two super conference situation emerges, maybe not explicitly, but maybe implicitly, even with 12, it becomes a tougher situation for Notre Dame.
Right. That's right. Where it gets sticky. Like if you, like what you're saying. Yeah. And like I said, other dominoes falling. If it comes to where it is, you know, everything's funneling to those two super conferences, like you say, then that's a completely different scenario for Notre Dame at that point. I think that there are probably, you know, like some conferences that will probably be willing to let Notre Dame at least keep a pie, you know, a piece of that pie, assuming, you know, they have a TV contract and that kind of, just like when they joined up with the ACC a couple of years ago, they all those said, okay, well, you can join, but we're getting part of your TV revenue. And Notre Dame was like, well, we want to play football this season, so that's fine. But yeah, you're right. The super conference, the idea of the two super conferences, that's the game changer for everybody, especially for Notre Dame. You're right.
Yeah.
Well, RJ, it's been great catching up with you as always. And like I said, I think we're all excited to see a very meaningful on both sides Notre Dame USC football game this weekend. Should be a lot of fun.
It should be great. Always great talking to you, Sean. Have a happy Thanksgiving and enjoy the game on Saturday. I think it's going to be a great one.
Absolutely. Thanks, RJ. We'll be right back.